Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, May 8th, 2015. And with me today, I have Brian Chaffin, proud Apple Watch owner. How are you, Brian?
I am more human than human.
Which is really impressive. You're uber human.
Apparently, yes.
Yeah. And also, I'll go ahead and give you an uber human ranking as well. John Martellaro. How are you, John?
Well, actually, I'm half Vulcan, as you know.
That's true.
Yes.
That's true. Yeah. Well, happy Ponfar.
Thank you.
Yeah. And now there's a group of people out there that are like, oh, really? Yeah. Well, okay. So the first thing I wanted to look at today, John, you wrote a piece yesterday where you took a look at what the COO of Fox said, which is that consumers don't want a la carte television. They really want the packages where they get all the channels, even the ones they don't watch. So what is up with that?
As soon as I read that article, I said, now I have my topic for today. This is 21st Century Fox COO Chase Carey. And he was talking to analysts. And I sensed that he was being a little protective of his turf. We're used to listening to Apple executives, and Apple executives have this good way of making us feel like they're serving our needs and they build products we love and their interests are aligned with our interests. But when I saw this fellow, Mr. Carey, talk about how, quote, "I don't think consumers want to buy a la carte," I thought, how could you have a less candid comment about what's going on with consumers? I mean, people have been trying for years to cut back on costs when they try to cancel part of their cable or satellite service. They find out they can't to lower costs. The only way they can get out is to cancel completely, and then they may have a contract and a termination fee, which can be pretty hefty. And contrast that to what people are doing on the internet and Apple TV and all these other boxes. And the choice that people have to pick what they want to watch when they want to watch it, and the popularity of streaming and HBO Now, and what's happening with Amazon Studio and Netflix doing its independent productions. Things are changing. And I started thinking about, well, what kind of turf is he protecting there? And I think the idea is that when you've got this massive network system where advertisers are spending big money and you've got particular political views, that gets funded and money flows into the network and everybody gets paid a lot of money. And it's kind of a cozy, nice scheme when you think about it. And for people to be able to go off on the internet, bypass cable, have cable companies and the satellite companies be disintermediated, pick and choose, watch what they want to watch, when they want to watch it, economically, budget themselves, is really kind of a threat. And so I kind of explored the scenario of that in the article.
All right, John. So my first question is, do you personally want a la carte cable?
Yeah, I think that would be nice. I'm a DirecTV customer, and I think I'm getting about maybe 40 or 50 channels that I could watch in high definition. And we routinely watch 10 of those. There's all sorts of things that are in my package that I never watch. In fact, even the Sci-Fi channel has grown wearying with Sharknado and wrestling. It used to be an essential part of our lives, science fiction channel, not so much anymore. I would gladly cut back to about 10 key channels.
Yeah, and actually that's one of the reasons why I stopped having a cable subscription, was because I was paying for so many channels that I would never watch, and to get the ones that I wanted, I was going to have to buy a higher price package that included even more content that I don't want.
Well, the higher the price of the package, the more money is the percentage that's pulled off the top. So if you can charge somebody 10, if you can take pull off 10% off the top and somebody's paying you $12 a month, that's not very much. But if you can charge somebody $100 a month, you can pull $10 off the month off the top for each customer. So the providers are very motivated to keep these package prices high and to make them grow.
Brian, I've cut you off twice. Sorry about that.
Go ahead, Brian.
I am here to actually play devil's advocate.
Oh, Brian.
Please do.
Shame on you.
It's because, first of all, there is absolutely a subset of people who want the packages. And that subset is probably not particularly small. I think there's a lot of people who are quite used to the way things are and quite used to the idea of having a bunch of channels to choose from. And there's change resistance. So there is at least a kernel of truth to what this guy is saying.
Yeah.
Not done yet.
Go ahead.
And then at the same time, of course, there is obviously a growing segment of consumers, and I think this is probably especially true with younger consumers, mm-hmm. who absolutely want a la carte, meaning that there is a kernel of the guys being ridiculous behind what he's saying too. But more specifically, I think that some people who actually say they want a la carte are actually quite happy having lots of channels to choose from, despite mm-hmm. what they say. Mm-hmm. They may not even be aware of that.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, I think the emerging trends are of concern to Mr. Carey and other executives. That,
yes.
That much is true.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Because, I mean, there's a lot of change resistance within the TV industry, right? We've been talking about this at the Mac Observer for a long time, because we knew that Steve Jobs and Tim Cook are both interested in doing something in the TV space. And we know that the studios and the networks have been very resistant to the idea of Apple owning their customer experience, because they all make quite a bit of money with the way things are. Thank you very much. And
yes,
they'd love to keep that. But, you know, it ain't going to happen. They're going to lose. HBO defecting will be seen as the moment when it all changed.
I agree.
Yep, I agree as well. And so I can understand why the Fox COO said what he said, because of course he's posturing and he's trying to hold on to the business model that has served them well for many, many years.
And there's a kernel of truth to it.
But I'm betting that part of this posturing is concern over what they see coming. And when HBO made their announcement, I'm betting that they said the same thing that you did, Brian, which is, this is the point when it all changed.
Yeah, you know, you remember when Steve told us that it's about the music, stupid?
Mm-hmm.
About videos, you know, how Apple wasn't interested in supporting videos on iPods.
Right.
And, I don't think very many of us took that seriously at the time. But my point is that this guy ain't Steve Jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas Steve Jobs would have said that as a diversion tactic. He's saying it because this is what he thinks.
And it's a little bit of desperation in there.
And a little bit of desperation. Yeah.
It makes me wonder, when I read this article, I got to thinking, why is it that the cable and dish industry aren't able to create that sense of surprise and delight and customer satisfaction and enthusiasm that Apple can create? I mean, surely it's not something fundamental. I mean,
No, it's totally fundamental. What they're doing is assembly line, basically a factory job sort of thing. And this assembly line just cranks out show after show after show.
Yeah, but I can imagine an environment where it could be restructured and rethought, and executives could be more candid and we could have more fun with TV.
Yeah, hold on. Yeah, Jeff, you're talking about TV shows and John's talking about the delivery system.
Oh, okay. Well, then those can be different.
I think a lot of that, John, is because for one thing, the cable industry in particular, DirecTV to me, TiVo and DirecTV both really stepped up the experience aspect and the user interface aspect of watching TV. And for years, the cable industry was able to get by with good enough. And I think that's actually predicated on a couple of things. For one thing, I think a lot of their people were just bad Windows developers. And, you know, the entire Windows world has always been centered around it's good enough. But there's also the fact that being in, you know, designing interfaces for cable boxes is not sexy. So it's not going to attract people who are really interested in coming up with things to surprise and delight us.
Yeah, but if your attitude was, we want to do the best, like Apple, and we're really going to pour something into this, and we're going to hire good people, we're going to make this a great experience, you could do that. It's just maybe a question of wanting to roll the money upwards instead of downwards, you know, so everybody gets paid well at the top.
I really think it's much more about it just not having ever been a priority. And to that end, today's Comcast's X1 interface, X1 Infinity, I forget what they call it. Comcast has stepped up its game, and I think it's stepped up its game in response to the internet and to Apple TV and to DirecTV and to TiVo. And so there is at least a little bit of pressure to provide a better experience right now, but it's, you know, still, I guess I'm sort of in your camp.
One of the things I'm going to talk about in Particle Debris today is something I saw. Comcast creates more than 5,500 new jobs as part of a multi-year customer experience transformation. I think they were stung pretty badly by that customer service call from hell that was recorded and went viral and may have had an influence. I hope it did.
I'm betting it did. It certainly didn't help their reputation or their image, considering who the recorded call was. It was one of the editors from The Verge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who already had a big following, and then the whole thing just kind of exploded.
You know, when you call in for customer service, it doesn't have to be a bad experience. There's no technical reason why people have to be obtuse and, you know, ridicule you and give you a hard time and try to sell you something if you want to quit or whatever. Why, you know, you can imagine an environment where the company says, we want to make this customer service, whatever you want, you're right. Well, how can we help you? You could do that.
They could. And to a degree, they do. So, anyhow, there's another topic that I want to hit before we have to wrap up today. So, I'm just going to jump right into that. And this is the whole thing with the Apple Watch heart rate sensor and its accuracy. So, for those of you that aren't up to speed on this, there's a guy that took the data from his Apple Watch heart rate sensor and the data from a Mio Alpha heart rate sensor. And Mio Alpha, it's a wristband, looks like a kind of a futuristic watch thing. That sole purpose is to track your heart rate, and it's amazingly accurate. It's like the standard for heart rate monitors. If you're not doing like the really high end chest strap and all that stuff, and this. And the Mio Alpha gives you accuracy that's in line with the chest strap systems. So, I mean, it's like really good. And Apple Watch nailed it. It came in with almost exactly the same results as the Mio Alpha, which I think is fantastic for people that want to have accurate fitness tracking information. And I think it also bodes well for the future of Apple Watch as a potential medical health tracker on some level.
Giddy up.
Yeah, giddy up. So anyhow, this now has now inspired me. So I do have a Mio Alpha tucked away somewhere. I need to find it and charge it back up, and then I will do my own comparisons so that I can match the results that this other guy posted. Because one set of data like that is great, but independent verification is even better. So that's exactly what I plan on doing.
You said during our morning meeting today, you hypothesized that the discrepancies there were were due to the longer sample rates.
Yes. So the Mio Alpha, when you're in your workout mode, is tracking, or it's taking heart rate samples every 3 seconds. Apple Watch, when you're in a workout mode, is taking samples every 5 seconds. And so based on the peaks and valleys, which is where the discrepancies happen, and they're just very minor differences at the high points and low points. I think the reason that we're seeing those differences is because the Apple Watch is taking fewer samples than the Mio Alpha. And I think if Apple were to go and change the software, do a software update so that it's sampled more frequently, then we'd see those results totally in line with each other.
Now, the reality is that Apple is sampling at the slower rate because it's better for battery life.
Sure, and that totally makes sense. And based on the results that I'm seeing from this other guy, I'm okay with Apple doing a 5 second sample rate as opposed to 3 second sample rate, because it is so close to what the Mio Alpha is doing that that unless you're doing like serious medical tracking, in which case you're not going to use either of these devices, I don't think it's going to matter that much.
At the same time, though, Apple could give us a higher accuracy setting.
Yes, right? They could,
and you know, have that be a toggle, with the understanding that it's going to decrease battery life.
Brian, I know you've only had your Apple Watch a few days, but and Jeff, you've had yours a bit longer. Yeah, how are you guys doing on battery life? Are you getting through the whole day?
I'm getting through the whole day with plenty of charge to spare. The first day I had it, I totally killed the battery, but I didn't charge it before I started using it. So I was doing heavy usage on a watch that had only a partial charge.
Mm-hmm. Mine arrived with 87% power.
And mine was like about 60%.
I stuck it on my wrist at about 2 p.m. and wore it until about 2 a.m. and had 32%.
Yeah, left. I think that's probably about the lowest charge that I've had at the end of a day. And some days I still have over 40% charge at the end of the day.
So mine wasn't a full day, but I also wasn't starting from a full charge. So there you have it.
Yeah, so I'm not seeing battery life as an issue at all. Now, we'll see what happens when I'm traveling and at conferences, where I tend to use my iPhone a lot more, which I think will now translate to I will use Apple Watch a lot more. So yeah, we'll see if I have to do a top off charge partway through the day at events like that. But I'm kind of thinking maybe I won't. So we'll see. And John, when you get your watch, I'm curious to see what your battery life is like.
One of these days,
it'll happen. I believe. Yeah. Hey, we're about out of time. So, John, thank you for being here today.
You're welcome.
And Brian, thank you for being here and playing the role of devil's advocate.
Indeed. Thanks for having us.
It's always great to have both of you. Listeners, it's always great to have you here as well. And please head over to the iTunes store and rate our show, because it's always great to get your feedback. And when you give feedback there, you're making it easier for other people to find us and join in on the fun as well. So everyone have an awesome weekend. We will see you again next week.